Hello, all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality. While listening, you'll be exposed to inspiring, empowering, and unifying perspectives that I'm highly confident will yield stellar results in your life if you opt to try them on for size. Also, at optimistic.tv, we have officially begun releasing the first few episodes of our new late-night style, consciousness-elevating video variety talk show, Optimistic, which features live visionary art, soul share interviews, retreat guests here at the Mystic Manor, as well as live musical performances. I'm also super excited to announce that we are currently making plans to release the rest of season one on my personal favorite online streaming service. So stay tuned to optimistic.tv to follow the unfolding development of this exciting Optimistic expansion, as we'll be posting more info and release dates there soon. And in the meantime, be sure to check out, of course, the first few episodes at optimistic.tv as well. All right, all you positive heads, on this week's SoulShare episode, I'm very excited to have Michael Burnoff here with me on the show. As a leader in the personal and professional development industry, Michael founded the Human Communications Institute and is the author of the book Average Sucks. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you for not being average and showing up this morning.
Well, I love it. I'm here, and I think that's everybody. We were all born not average. It's just a tendency we have as human beings is to be like everybody else and to play smaller than we need to.
I fully agree. And your greatest superpower is the uniqueness that is you. And a lot of times people get caught up in the emulation game, and that is a not the path to your greatness, I don't believe.
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll dive deep into that. I want to start at the very predictable intro question that I always ask, and it is this. You're in an elevator. The woman next to you looks over, says, "What's your passion?" You have 10 floors to answer. What do you say?
Communication. The biggest thing, the thing is that teaching human beings how to use communication as an answer to get what they want in this world. Passion. Cool. Communication.
Has anyone ever told you that you communicate, when you communicate, your voice actually sounds like Tony Robbins?
I've been getting that since I was a kid. Even when I was a kid, we have the same voice coach, Roger Love, we've worked with for years.
I get it. Okay, cool.
I'm 6'6" also, so I've known of Tony for a long time.
That's funny. Tony in another bio body suit. I like it. I like it. This is going to be good.
Yep, with a little bit of a different agenda.
Yeah, cool. That's the unique factor, right?
Yep.
So, let's, if you would, share a little bit of your backstory. I always like to give the listeners some context and who the heck they're hearing from.
Well, my backstory is simple. I mean, I have several backstories. It's interesting. I don't have that story that most speakers have. Typically, even Tony's story, it's like, everyone knows growing up in Venice, California,
where I'm at,
living out of the bathtub, right? All that stuff. And
yep.
I don't have that story of negativity, of a problem. I don't have that story of, growing up, my parents left me on the subway when I was 9, and I'm definitely not like Steve Jobs' kid. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have either one. So my background is interesting. It's probably similar to yours. I grew up right down the middle. I'm a middle-class kid from New Jersey that my whole life has not understood how to get what I want. And what I mean by that is I would see things, I'd want things, but for the majority of my life, pretty much everybody around me didn't have them. And I grew up very, very average as a kid, other than my height. And one of the things that I got obsessed with is could not figure out why I would stop myself when I knew better, meaning that I was one of these people that it felt like I was at the edge of a diving board and didn't want to jump. Like, I'd want to be better in hockey, played as a kid, but I couldn't push myself to do it. I wanted to ask that girl out, but I had a wall that would stop me, and I could not figure out what that was until I got older. And then when I stumbled across personal development, I'm like, why did they not teach this stuff in schools? Like, where was this? It's stuff that I've been thinking about my entire life. Why are they not sharing this with people? So my backstory is simple. I'm a guy like the majority of people on earth that had enough. I was doing okay. But for some reason, I wanted more and I had no idea how to get it.
Interesting.
I could go deeper than that, but that's the backstory. You didn't ask for the current story.
Well, okay, yeah. Well, if you care to continue how that, you know, finally you had enough of being average and where that led you, you know, love to hear
it. I mean, the story is simple. I went to college and I was a professional partier. I went to school. I was really good at it. You gotta be good at something, right? So I went to Arizona State. My parents said, do you want to go to college in New Jersey, which costs double, or go to Arizona, which is the party capital of the world in the 90s, right? And that was my option. And I did really, really good, not at school, but at hanging out, socializing, because I finally get out of my comfort zone. And I was asked to not come back my second year nicely, like, hey, kind of maybe you're not good at this. Take a break. And I went to community college at Mesa Community College. See, what's funny is I never got into business school. And I don't know how many of your listeners are in business, but I love the idea of business. But that was for the smart kids that paid attention, right? Which I wasn't. I was smart, but I wasn't paying attention. I had ADD, right? So I was in a business class in junior college, and the teacher came out and he offered, he goes, hey, one of the projects we had to read. And I'm like, ugh, reading, right? Who wants to read, right? And there was a list of books. It was like The Wealth of Nations, Winning or something by Lee Iacocca. And then one was How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now picture being 19 years old, single guy, and you get offered how to influence people. And I can't even tell you whether I read the book or not, but one of the things that I got from the book was, wow, you're not destined to be who you were born to be. And my parents' old plan of just work hard and be a good person, because that's what they told me my whole life. They said, work hard, be a good person. You want that car? Work hard, be a good person. You want to have it make the team? Work hard and be a good person. And I tried that in life and failed miserably. And what I got out of that book, and I can't even tell you whether I read it or not, but I got it that day. You want to go spiritually? I got it. And what I got that day is, you are not destined to be who you were born to be. You have the ability to be all that you can be. And that's the day I'm going to tell you, I really woke up that day, and I woke up understanding, wait a second, Michael Burnoff has the ability to be more than who he currently is being. Yeah. And I went on that journey, man, 23 years ago, and I never looked back.
Love that. You know, yeah, I love the quote, and I can't recall where I picked it up, who said it, but something to the effect of, a person must be what they can be. And, you know, I don't know if you must be it, but it certainly is going to lead to the greatest and grandest version of yourself. And I had a guy on the show a couple of years ago named Richard Rudd. I'm not sure if you're familiar. He wrote a book called Yeah, he's amazing. He wrote a book called The Gene Keys. And speaking of being, you know, getting spiritual on you, he, you know, very poetic, brilliant guy who in his early 20s had a profound spiritual experience. He was doing some sort of exercise, you know, that activated something in him. And he woke up in the morning with this crazy download and all these visions. And it led to him having a full download of this thing he calls The Gene Keys, is his book. And it's sort of like a modern astrology. It's very deep and powerful, and you lay out you can cast your chart. And he's in his 50s now, but this all came to him in a moment, downloaded, you know, essentially in his early 20s. And he shares the whole story in the interview I did with him. But if you guys, by the way, want to go, just go on to positivehead.com and search Richard Rudd, R-U-D-D.
Yeah, I started thinking that right now. I took a note. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. Oh, he's amazing. And the Gene Keys is, I mean, it's like this poetic channeled material that basically shows, here's your genetic, here's the keys within your genetic makeup as a person based off of astrology, numerology, all these things. And then it's like, okay, here's your middle of the road you. Here's your, you know, if your potential is squandered, like the worst iteration of it. And here is if it becomes its most flowered potential. And so you have these three, I forget what they're called, but these three markers, you know, that, and then you can see, okay, here's me, here's a glimpse of who I am. And if I unlock the keys in my genes, in my DNA, then this is what I sort of evolve into as my greatest and grandest potential. And, you know, here's the other end of that, and here's the middle of the road. So it's really, really a powerful book to explore.
Wow. Yeah, what's fascinating about it is I remember years ago, a guy walked up to me and he said, "How tall are you?" And I'm 6'6". And he goes, "Why don't you start acting like it?" I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You play life like 5'11". And I think and it's interesting. It really got me to realize that we're really good at being trying to be like everybody else or do all these things. But what a journey life would be if we could actually fully complete who we are. And that's, right. I think that when I talk about average sucks, it's not about being better than anybody else. It's really about facilitating the full version of you and getting that person to show up in the world.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. And, you know, and I don't know if it makes sense. You tell me, does it make sense to sort of dive into some of the particulars of the book, Average Sucks? Or
I mean, we live in an ADD society today, man. I mean, we jump all over the place. It makes more sense to be going in a straight line. So
you're speaking my language.
I wrote the book. People said when the book first came out, thousands of copies got sold in a day or two, and in like 5,000-6,000 copies in the first week. And I probably got 500-800 people got back to me and they said, "Michael, I finished it already." And at first I'm like, "Wow." And then I'm like, "That's cool. They actually read it." And then I'm like, "Of course they read it. I wrote it to be read, and I wrote it to be easy to be read. And I wrote it for people in an ADD world with ADD as a guy that understands that." I don't mean even like attention deficit disorder. I mean like adynamic disorder. We're distracted as humans, and I had to make
it easily
palatable. So I'll jump anywhere, man. I'll cover anything right now that makes a difference in the world. And just the fact that you do this show and that you're here offering this greatness to people, you're giving people an alternative to being on their social media feed, listening to garbage.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk. Let's dive in. Let's talk about the book and what, you know, obviously people to get the full download, they're going to want to go and buy the book and read it and all that jazz. But how do we do the ADD Cliff Notes version of, you know, some of the high level things that would be powerful takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with the book is about it's an interesting concept. So when I went to write the book, one of the things that I recognized was that the book truly needed to be written. It took me about 9 years to write the book. This is a story in itself, right? And here's why it took me 9 years to write it. One, I was writing the wrong book for a while. Number two was about a 10-year-old boy was trying to write the book, meaning that I was looking to prove a point, do it myself, not ask for help, you know, overcome my own insecurities, get the book done, know how to be perfect, all that stuff. And then one day, and I finally got it done, I'll talk to you later how I actually did that, is that I didn't have any reference points to read about this. It wasn't like I was like teaching how to make a jump shot or how to write a book or how to do a podcast. You know, that's out there. There was nothing else out there like this. So my whole life, I could never figure out like what was that feeling that kept on holding me back. Like, why did I make about the same amount of money every year? Why is it that my intimacy was about the same all the time? Why was my body about the same all the time? Like, what was that force that held us back? And in putting it together, I realized it's our average. So the book is really about that automatic force that controls the majority of your life that you don't realize. It's the automatic program that our unconscious mind has set up, and it's an understanding of what it is. I mean, I spend chapters breaking down something no one has ever read before, no one's ever heard before, of why you do what you do. Why do you work out for 3 days, take off for 10? And I can look at your life, you do it every time. Why do you make 100 grand a year and 100 grand next year, 80 the next year, 112 the next year? And if we average it out, it's always 100, right? Why are people making and doing about the same in every area of their life? So the book talks about that. And I could go deeper. I'd love to go back and forth and be as conversation as the book is. And then maybe ask me a little bit about it. I'll dig a little deeper with you.
Cool. Yeah. So it's very much in line with what, you know, I was just referencing. It sounds like with the Gene Keys is like, okay, here's your baseline. Yep. And you can certainly accept that and sort of cruise through life. You know, one of the things that I always think back. So thinking years ago, when my grandmother passed, my brother had a very powerful dream where she visited him in the dream. He thinks it was a visitation. Who knows such things? But it was a very lucid dream. And, you know, he's asking her about a project at the time, like, "Oh, what's going to happen with this? You know, you're on the other side and I'm communicating with you through this lucid, powerful dream state. What is going to happen? What is going to become of this, the outcome?" Right? He's trying to get some oracle action. And she's like, you're going to get out of it exactly what you put into it. And I loved that response because I really, it stuck with me. And that was, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago that happened to him. And it's just always stuck with me, this notion that everything is going to reflect back to you what you put into it. So I'm curious how, you know, that concept weighs in with, you know, your perspective on being average.
Well, Brandon, the whole thing is how it weighs in is that here's the problem. And this is why I couldn't get the book done. I could never do the book. Who I was then couldn't do the book. This is the part people don't understand, is that who you are currently cannot have what you want. And this is the part the whole personal development industry is wrong, that I figured out that they're a bunch of drug dealers selling your own dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin back to you. I'm not saying you can't have it. I'm just saying you can't do it. And I want to be really clear, who you are currently is not designed to have what you want. Here's what happens in our lives. And this is all the research I did. Let me ask you a question. Before you did this podcast, what were you doing? Like 5 years ago, what were you doing?
You know, I've been a serial entrepreneur and had, at that time, I was very deep in a travel company that had experienced, you know, from me to 100 employees. And so I was very deep in managing that exponential growth of that company.
Got it. Okay. And then one day you decided that wasn't exactly where you wanted to be, correct?
You know, it was a part of the story of what I wanted to experience, but it wasn't the part that, you know, the podcast was able to really fulfill, which is, you know, really wanting to get my message out about the ultimate nature of reality and how to create more magic and abundance in our lives. As so you know, teaching best what I most needed to learn.
Yeah, you got to the point where you said, I don't want to do that anymore. So you said, basically, we all get to a point in our lives where we say to ourselves, never again, right?
Yep.
Never again, relationship, never again. It's like people, I've been around direct sales since I was 19 years old. And everyone gets to a point, I never want to work for anyone else. I want to own my own thing. Never again will I be lied to. Never again will I have a bad relationship. We all get to a point we say never again, right? And we put a wall behind us, which is like a barricade that says I will never go back there. And we usually mean it because we're pretty damn emotional about it. And we mean it. And at that same moment, opportunity shows up. And basically what happens is this beautiful wall in front of us of a dream of gorgeous butterflies and possibilities and all the potential in the world. We're like, oh my God, I don't want that. I want that thing in front of us. And we live our lives bouncing back in front of what I don't want, what I do want, what I don't want, what I do want, what I don't want, and I do want. And if you think about dinner conversations, when people would go out to dinner back in the day, when people went to dinner, right? What would happen was, what would happen is when people were out to dinner, they would, that's what they talk about. What I don't want, what I do want, what I don't want, what I do want. And then what happens is you build two other walls for yourself. You build these identity for yourself of how you see you. And I always say we put it on the right because it's our need to be right. And we put this identity to the right of ourselves of this is who I am and this is what I want. This is what I don't want. This is not what I get, but this is what I want. And then we strategically put the appropriate people in our lives to remind us of who we are, some to motivate us, some to scare us, some to piss us off, so we can facilitate a wantingness, not a gettingness, a wantingness and a desire. And we live in this average of wanting something, but never actually getting it. And because if you got it, you'd have a different average. And this is how most people live their lives, wanting this thing of one day they're maybe going to get there versus accepting that we need to reinvent what that is. And the majority of people on earth don't even know that they did that to themselves. You got out of a relationship, you got pissed off, you said, never again, I'll never put myself in that situation. Here's what I do want. And you spend your whole life bouncing back and forth between this, and you don't realize that you've got to get over that wall to get everything you want. And there's a few ways to get over that wall, but most people think it's run your head through it. It's not going to work.
Okay. That's a very interesting perspective that I think everyone can relate to. Particularly, you know, you use the relationship example, because I think that's one of the most potent times we've all been there. Right. Let's dive deeper into that. So how does someone first acknowledge that they put themselves in between these two walls, and what is the way to sort of break free from this cycle?
Yeah, you don't have to even break free, which is great. You're not going to have to do as much hard work as you think you do. First thing is this is like almost like AA or 12 steps. Is the hardest part in the world for people. The first step to anything is accepting you're not where you want to be. And I think most people really screw this up. I meet salespeople. You mentioned serial entrepreneur. I'll walk up to incredible salespeople and I'll say to them, what do I say? I said, how are you at sales? And they're like, yeah, I'm fantastic. I said, what'd you make last year? I made 85,000. You're really not that good then, dude. Like, you're like, no, I'm really great. Well, compared to on right. billions, Bobby Axelrod making 20 billion, you're really not that good, right? Yeah.
Like, you're in the lower echelon.
You suck. Admit it. You suck.
Yeah.
And the reason right. is it's hard for people to admit they're not good at things, right? So, yeah. And that's the thing most people don't recognize. Like, how's your body? Oh, yeah, it's good. You're 20 pounds overweight. It's really not that good. So accepting yeah. you're not where you want to be offers ultimate opportunity, because if you're not where you want to be, opportunity shows up. Also, instantly, it offers insecurity. And it's that insecurity that accepting where you are not where you want to be that offers you the ability to grow. If you are willing to accept you're not where you want to be, requires the need to believe that you need to grow. And it's in that growth that offers you the ability to get what I'd call over the wall and into a whole new average, which is the one you've been desiring in the first place.
Ah, yeah, I think, you know, and you touch on something that I think is super important for all of us as we develop and grow and evolve into the next greatest and greatest version of ourselves, which is humility, right? It's like, if humility is not a part of your experience, I don't think you really understand what's going on. And, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And for me, that's, you know, obviously you don't want that to get out of balance, too, where you're just sort of like, you know, always going. It's about finding balance, right? Sometimes people go too far the other way and it's like, or overly humble. And, you know, as a result, sort of diminishing their own power and et cetera. So it's, you know, I think it's really important to find the balance of, you know, okay, there's a lot further to go. I may have gotten, you know, much farther than where I was. And, but there's a lot further that I still want to go and not, you know, I think part of it is a lot of times people get comfortable too, right? They just get into like, oh, okay, cool. I made it to a certain level and this is pretty comfortable. And I think I'm going to just kick back and, you know, and cruise it out from here. And that's something that I think has always served me, because I haven't always gotten it, but I've always reached for more. And I've always, you know, that Chinese proverb, you know, fall down 7 times, stand up 8. I've always sort of been that person. And that's served me well as well.
Yeah. I'll tell you the biggest challenge I'd say people have is they don't realize what they're capable of. And our natural tendency is to pull towards being like other people. This is why we have to be really careful. I mean, we warn kids about streets. Where'd you grow up? Did you grow up in LA?
I grew up in Virginia, actually.
Oh, really? What part?
East Coaster, too. Chesapeake down, it's right Norfolk, Virginia Beach area, southeastern corner.
I'm from Jersey, so when we used to...
Come down for vacations, right?
Yeah, we come out for vacations. I got friends in Alexandria, you know, down by DC. We go to Ocean Beach, you know, or Maryland and stuff. So
That
3 to 4 hour Dewey Beach, those 3 to 4 hour radius.
One
of the things I recognized is, and the reason I bring this up is most people, we've got this gravitational pull to be like everybody else. And like when you're in LA or New York, my parents would say, watch out, there's good people, there's bad people. Well, the internet too, like we have this natural tendency to watch and admire what people do. And we are pulled towards being like others instead of pulled towards being all of ourselves. And that's the part that most people don't recognize. It's like, I want to be like Michael Jordan. Why do you need to be like Michael Jordan when you could be the full version of you? The full version of you probably could get you the jump shot Michael Jordan had. I'm not a basketball guy, but the part most people don't recognize is, why do you need to be them when you can be you? This is the part most people do not understand. Like if you get all biblical and spiritual back in the day, we don't idolize other people. We should be pretty damn proud of ourselves. But the problem is we haven't activated the majority of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I fully agree with that. And I think it comes back to, you know, really understanding. I always offer the perspective that there is something unique in you. Yes, we're all one and we're all the same from a spiritual perspective. Our consciousness is one. And we're also simultaneously, it's like, it's relative truths. Like you and I are one, you and I are separate. Both are true depending on the perspective from which we're speaking, right? So from one perspective, each and every one of us is completely unique, I believe. And we have unique gifts that are, if we unlock, you know, our highest, greatest and grandest selves, our greatest and grandest potential, that is incredibly rewarding. That is the most rewarding thing we could do, which is why our soul even set up that as a potential path for us. And the whole game here is to unlock that. So if you can take on, I believe taking on the story of who and what your life is meant to be is the most important thing that leads to where it can go. And if you take that as your foundational operating system, that, okay, there's something here that I am uniquely positioned to be, and no one could do it better. Just like no one could be Michael Jordan better than Michael Jordan. You have your own version of that. And if you are always looking and saying, okay, and operating from that, then you instantly are inviting it in and drawing yourself towards that, as opposed to, you know, telling a story of, you know, I'm mundane, I'm average, and there's nothing special or great. We're all special.
I don't know if people are consciously walking around calling themselves average, but they don't realize what's controlling them. And that's if you stopped and really thought about it for a minute, everything has an average. Everything's got a mm-hmm. like the main function of the unconscious mind, which is fascinating. I spent 20 years studying. I'm one of the best in the world at neurolinguistic programming and transformational language patterns. And one of the things that I recognized is that most people do not understand by any stretch of the imagination how their unconscious mind works. Its desire is to make your life easy. So this average is not a negative thing. It's you were honest. One day you said never again. And your mind goes, dude, I'll do that for you. Whatever you need, you've got it. Never again. I will make certain that happens. And then we facilitate by putting relationships in our lives that hold us where we're at. One of the biggest reasons people don't go get what they want is it will upset your place in the world that you've set up for yourselves, and there'll be carnage. So if you actually decided to get yourself in great shape, you got explaining to do to a lot of people. Like, so this is what's crazy, Brendan. I got to just throw this at you, is that if you woke up tomorrow and said, you know what? I have got to make more money. There's not enough right now. I absolutely have been lying to myself. I do not make enough money. You just have to prove to yourself that what you've been doing for 10 or 15 years is wrong. And that's harmful and painful to yourself. So then you're thinking to yourself, wow, in order to make more, you have to cause harm to your current identity, which is scary as hell. So it's a lot easier to stay who we are than to cause harm. I remember listening to Alan Watts years ago and said, our favorite game in life is to play that we can't get what we want, because if we got it, we'd be bored.
Right. Yeah. And I think that just keeps people locked in place. It's like, yep. Okay, you know, I take, for example, my current situation. You know, I live at this place we call the Mystic Manor, where I've stretched myself to the fullest.
The Mystic Manor. It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's like something from the 70s. I love
them. Yeah. And, you know, in order to do it, it was like I had to stretch and disrupt the ultimate comfort situation financially, where my living situation, everything was like perfectly simple and no stress for a decade. And, you know, and after having had in my early 20s a lot of financial stress and up and down and things like that, I could have easily said, oh my gosh, I do not want to invite that back in. And I, you know, it was necessary for growth, you know, isn't always comfortable. You know, the caterpillar is at some point in that process of turning into the butterfly, probably saying, what the heck am I doing to myself? This is not worth it. I'm going to disrupt everything. And so it's that same thing. And by doing it and stretching and, you know, to be more and to have a, you know, create a show that's the next level of Positive Head, which I've worked on and you know, have just started releasing and now is getting adding on to a bigger platform that I'm about to announce soon. And it's like, I had to do so much disrupting in order for that to be possible. And it had to be foundational that I believed that I could, and that I also had to tell the story. And even if I, quote unquote, failed, I would grow and learn from it and it would be perfect. And that's something that's really served me, is like, okay, what is the intention of why I'm doing what I'm doing? Is it pure? Is it good? Is it an ego-based play? Is it is it because I really want to experience more and to offer more to the world and be better service and to feel more fulfilled? Okay, cool. My intentions line up, so I can't lose no matter what the outcome is. That's something that really has served me well.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the biggest issue people have, and if you're listening to this podcast right now, you're a person that wants to grow, which is amazing. So congratulations, and you're in the right place, which is just incredible that you found this and you're here. And one of the great missions in life is to see what we're capable of as people. And one of the ways to mix that up is to not know not know your direction of where you're going. Like I always say, my tombstone's already been picked out. It doesn't say father. It doesn't say husband. It doesn't even have my name. It's like all used up, nothing left in it all, right? That's my game. Like that's
love it.
And I believe everybody should have a very similar one. It's like, are you here to see what you're capable of? And I don't mean, a lot of times when you hear that, the natural socialization inside of us immediately wants to say, did you get six-pack abs? Did you become a billionaire? Did you drive a Ferrari? I don't mean that. I mean, like, did you learn how to sing? Did you learn how to play the piano? Did you learn whether you like Broadway or not? Did you learn to try making movies? Did you start a podcast? Like, did you do things? And
yep.
I think most of us think that if we just push hard enough, like my parents taught me, the child of the 80s in the middle class is, it's another reason I did this book is that, do you know what really happened in the world? And when this whole Corona thing hit, this is where everything, I've got crazy stories about this, but around the 40s and the 50s, in the 40s and the 50s, they came up with an idea. They said, hey, listen, people feel uncomfortable. We got to get a way to get them to feel safe. And they invented the middle class. Like, I don't know how old you are, but when I was a kid, I watched Little House on the Prairie. Did you ever watch that show?
Yep.
Do you remember
I
that?
Loved it. Okay. Half,
so did
half
I. Point. I mean, we got to admit, us guys like this girl
yeah,
show.
I grew up in the 80s too. I'm born in the 70s, okay.
I'm
77.
I was born. When were you born?
74.
Okay, got it. So we're the same yep. Goonies, Pearl Jam, you know,
yeah,
we're the same.
We hit it perfect time. I mean, Nirvana came out when I was a senior in high school, for God's sake. It was like, could it be more perfect?
So you and I are a child of the 80s, and we watched Little House on the Prairie. You were either poor or rich. Nelly was the rich kid. You were
yep.
poor. So
yep.
that was the world until 1950. And then yep. they overrode biology. And what's amazing is there is no biological ability to have this middle zone. That doesn't really work. And what they did is they eliminated natural adversity from people. And because it was really good for about 40, 50 years. So when we were kids, the food supply was still good. You could call up your local, electronics store, get that yellow Sony Walkman, you know, the waterproof one we all had.
Oh,
that?
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
the auto reverse. And they'd say, yeah, it takes 7 to 10 days. There was patience. There was all this stuff until about 1995, when all the adversity went away, when electronics and the internet came out, right? Then you're my daughter now. And she orders, she does the job, does a good thing. She wants this new doll or a new dress for her American Girl doll, right? So she goes on the internet to get it. She pushes go, or we put down the credit card, push go. And then she runs to the front door. She's 4 years old, wondering why it's not there yet, right? So
right.
we have become people that aren't patient. We don't move as much. Like we at least in the 80s had to move. We rode our bike. You know, you had to go
totally.
To the store. Things weren't
outside
there.
All day, every day playing.
There was natural adversity, right? Now, natural adversity is gone. So when this whole Corona thing hit and the world today, everyone's like, oh my God, what do? We're a group of human beings that have not felt adversity since the Vietnam War. I mean, what adversity? Like, come on. You're telling
right.
me that the struggle in 08 and 09 was as bad as what happened before we were born, where our uncles and aunts were getting told they're going to a country 10 gazillion miles away and half of them came back in body bags. We didn't
right.
have adversity. So
right.
we have a world of 40 years with very limited adversity. And because of that, human beings haven't grown in a long period of time. So the problem with the average is the world, at least in North America, has become very, very average in the way that we think. We have not had natural growth in a long period of time. So if you think about it, the middle class, which is dead now, is one of the biggest reasons success has been so hard for people to obtain.
Yeah, it created that big, comfortable average that everyone sort of fell into. So I
guess from
that perspective, though, it's, you know, it's shaking things up and, you know, hopefully will lead to more people feeling fulfilled in what it is that they're, you know, what,
I mean,
know,
what are you supposed to do? Are you really going to get fulfilled getting a brand new fridge, a brand new car? Is that fulfillment?
Fulfillment
is finding out what you're capable of. And the only way you find out what you're capable of is if you don't have the life you want. And this is why, like, do you think a Little House back in the day, you think Pi ever said, man, I can't make it to the gym. I'm having trouble getting in shape. The dude was in shape because he was on the plow all day, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I pulled up this quote that you made me think of a minute ago by Hunter S. Thompson. You probably heard it before. I love it. Life should not... Life should not be a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside in a cloud of smoke, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, "Wow, what a ride."
Yep. I agree with that 100%. And I think most people, that's not their game plan. Most people's game plan is, how do I get safe? The problem is you're already safe. You don't even realize it. You know what's crazy? You could sit on your ass right now. Anybody could. Let's say, like, right now we're recording this. You mind if I date the date? Do you mind if I put the date down?
No, sure.
Okay. It's June, right? 2020, right? Right in the middle of just whatever's going on, right? And if you and I just took a nap, like, and you said, you know what? You take a nap. You're in LA. I'll take one here in Phoenix. Let's not do anything for 4 months. It'll be about October, midway through October. And we'd wake up and go, wait a second. We didn't do anything this year. And in 2 months or 3 months, we would make up the difference for everything we missed all year. And the reason is our bodies can't be normal. Like, we have to do that. So all the money, you'd go make it. Your body, get back in shape. Your relationships would heal themselves. And the reason why is we have an automatic that controls our life, and it'll always control our lives. And that's the part most people don't recognize is whatever you're doing, you don't have to work very hard to do what you're doing. You have to work a little harder to get what you want, but what you're currently doing, you're working way too hard to maintain. You'll do it automatically.
Interesting. Yeah. And you said something a minute ago, you're already safe. And, you know, that really ties into the perspective of the show that I come back to all the time, is this idea that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, not human beings trying to have a spiritual experience. So what does that mean? Well, essentially, you weren't created, you know, in 1977. You actually incarnated in 3D in the third dimension in 1977 and have amnesia to where you were prior. So you start playing with the idea that you're an eternal being that actually can't be harmed. You're in eternally secure, and you actually came here so you could experience that adventure and all those things that really aren't possible from a, you know, invincible being ultimately. And so, you know, when you came in to play it safe and to not take any chances, I think back, I've told this story many times on the show, and I'll continue because it really sums it up for me, is I had a woman show up at my house with a friend years back. I only met her that day, and we got talking. I don't even remember her name, but we got talking about her life, and she had shared how she had a near-death experience. And she was, you know, swimming a long distance, and she ran out of energy and started sinking under. And she goes, "Well, this is it. I have no power left. I'm sinking to the bottom," is the last thing she remembers. Next thing from there she remembers is being on the other side, and someone is there with her. Some being is there and said, "Well, welcome back to non-physical. You know, you've died, you drowned, first thing they said is, "But you experienced everything that you wanted over there, right? You went for it all, right? You took all the risks, right?" In a very, like, kind of prodding, almost sarcastic way. And of course she hadn't. She was, like, you know, 25 years old, 30 years old at the time. And And next thing she knows, she's back in the water. Something's miraculously pulling her to the top. She has the power to continue swimming, and she goes on. And so I always think of that. It's such a great example. When we get to the other side, I believe that's going to be the very first thing. Okay, let's take a look. It's not how many refrigerators you had or how many fast cars you had. It's like, what was your experience? How much did you push yourself to the edge to become the greatest and greatest version of yourself, the highest potential that you have? And did you tell the story that you are worthy, and that potential is there waiting to be uncovered, just like everything else in nature that blooms and grows into its fullest expression before it passes over, right? A flower doesn't play it small and say, "Oh yeah, I don't want to bloom into the greatest thing I can. I'm going to create." If you create the circumstances for it to emerge, that's the key. You know, it's really, if you take the acorn and it's sitting on a shelf, it's not going to grow into the oak tree. You put it with the right conditions and it grows into this miraculous thing, right?
I mean, that's the part people don't recognize, how things really work. And we want to shield ourselves from the truth and be safe. It's why I'll be at my events for years, and I'll say, how many of you can name a leader that's been merged in the last 100 years? Like, someone that's really made a difference. And, like, you normally get the answers. You get Gandhi, Martin Luther King, you know, you get these kind of people, right? And then I'm like, okay, what about the last 30 years? They're like, Oprah, right? And I'm like, okay, big difference, Gandhi and Oprah. I don't think they're in the same ballpark, but okay, I'll do that. And I'd say that for years, and I'd be mad. I'm like, oh, why are there no leaders? Why are nobody stepping up? And then I realized we really haven't had a lot of adversity in the last 30 years. You know, every one of these great leaders came out of really bad crap, right? Bad things were going on. So when everything started going interesting in 2020, because that's what I call it, interesting right now, opportunity like presents that. Itself because who said growth was supposed to be easy? And the answer right. is isn't. Like, you want to be a Navy SEAL, you go through a lot. You want a spiritual yep. journey? Go research Buddha. Go figure out who he was prior, right? If it's yep. true, the stories, it wasn't yep. easy. Jesus yep. wasn't easy. Moses yep. wasn't easy. Every one of these great leaders, I mean, Joseph Campbell positions it very well. Hero's journey is not an easy thing. So yep. you need a challenge. You need something to overcome, manufactured or real, right? We need a challenge. Yep. And that's where we emerge in our greatness. And that's why I tell everyone that destroying a dragon, resuscitating the dragon, destroying the dragon, resuscitating the dragon, you're still fighting the same dragon. The question is, are you willing to take on a new challenge? So here's when I talk about that wall, if I backtrack to 15 mm-hmm. minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, sure. remember that wall I talked about? We're all trying to get to our want. And it's this big, clear window shopping wall, big, thick glass, and we're trying to get in. And because we're not rioters, we're not going to break in, right? But we're trying to get in, right? And we've got yep. this beautiful wall in front of us. And the question is, if everything you want is through that, you got two options. You can lower your shoulder, try to get through, or we can grow, or we can ask for help and let somebody hoist us over the wall, and then we get to the other side. And what's on the other side, it's a whole new average, and you're going to get a new average. But this is where most people get stuck, is they don't know how to grow. And I don't remember, like, when you went to school, let me ask you a couple questions. Did you finish mm-hmm. high school?
I did.
Okay. So when you were in high school, I knew you did. I just wanted to ask. When you finished high school, did they ever teach a class on success? Like, did you ever take Success 101?
No, not that I recall.
What about How to Deal with a Breakup 205?
I did not. I missed that one. I must have skipped
school
that
day. What about how to deal with a meltdown if you have kids? 506.
Yeah, I was out that day. I was out that
and
day.
And the other day yeah. I missed is the day that they decided who I was and I bought into it. And that's the 2 days I missed at school, is like those 2 days, how to live my life effectively. And I didn't know that they had made some decisions for me that I went along with their plan. And I bought into an identity that wasn't really me. And I think a lot of us don't recognize that you're living an identity that you created when you were 5 years old.
Right. Right. And you know, being in, instead of saying, gosh, this sucks, I'm a victim sort of scenario, like, I challenge everyone listening to say, and I'm grateful for that, because now I have the opportunity to overcome yep. that limitation, that yep. I get that hero's journey tale, which, by the way, every great movie, every great story is the hero's journey, because that's the story of mankind, and that's your story. And so you can't have something to overcome. In this case, a limiting perspective that was sold to us, that we bought, you know, unknowingly, if it's not there. So, you know, congratulations, becoming aware that it's even, you know, it's actually an opportunity for you to experience, you know, being the hero.
And that's a lot. You got to ask a question, you know, which part do you want to play? I remember hearing, it was Werner Erhard or something on an old audio on YouTube I found. It said something to the effect of, all parts are available. The CEO, the doctor, the lawyer, the guy at the opera, and the man who holds the stick in back, and the extra. Most people are being an extra in someone else's movie instead of playing the main part, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
you've got to ask yourself, like, which role do you choose to play? And that's especially when something hits, like this whole corona thing, or just the world the way it is right now. Like, what's your role? Like, I was built for this shit. Like, I was built for challenges, to overcome them. What I learned from that is, okay, that's fascinating. That means I need a challenge to grow. So you might not have a challenge universally like we have right now, but then you need to seek them out to get yourself to continue to grow. And that's what this is all about. Like, so my wake-up call to everybody is that I truly believe that communication is the most underdeveloped and underutilized asset that we have as human beings to getting what we want. But very, very few of us even understand what the word communication even means.
Right. Right. Yeah, it truly is. You know, I always say I over communicate to achieve what I want. Is, you know, it's my way of really sifting through all the perspectives and potentials and energy of whatever the situation is. And I fully, for me, communication has been the most powerful tool. And I'm curious, speaking of that, you have the Human Communications Institute. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're a company that was we're an institute. It's a company that was formed to really help people understand that their future hinges on their ability to effectively communicate. And when people hear that, like, oh yeah, you know, body language and words. I'm like, nah, dude, you don't got it. And what I mean by that is, communication is how you hold files inside of your brain, like what things actually mean to you when you do certain things. Like half the world communicates with themselves, oh, you know, no big deal. I love, like people get married, right? Like, oh, my wedding was the greatest day of my life. I'm like, dude, you're in trouble. Because if that was the greatest day of your life, what are you going to do for the next 60 years? What are you planning, right? Like, it's going to get worse, right? So it's one of the, you should say up till now, that has been an incredible day. And I'm excited to see what the future holds. But our world is dominated by the language that we use. And even like with food, like I teach people how to lose weight by talking to their food. I know that sounds crazy, but you want it practical. How about I give you the most practical thing in the world right now? You want practical? Every one of your listeners could love losing a couple LBs, especially right now in the middle of this June crap I got dealing with, right? So I'm in a group of doctors, right? I have no medical background. I charge more than any therapist in the country for quick change work that I do, but I don't have any degrees, failed psych 101 three times. I just happen to understand how to get results out of people. And I'm in front of 1,000 doctors in Nashville last year, and all of which are some of the highest functional medicine chiropractors, really big thinkers in the world. And I said, how many of you drink shakes? All the hands go up, right? I said, you guys should never drink a shake ever again for the rest of your life. And they looked at me like they're nuts, because some of them make a living off shakes, right?
Yeah, and I said,
okay, let me explain what I mean. You shouldn't drink a shake, because the way the body works, most people don't understand. There's a reason for everything. And it's even like when a baby's born, breast milk has a little bit of sucrose in it that numbs the baby's palate, makes them drink the milk, right? So babies live. Well, when you drink a shake, what happens is whatever's in the shake winds up just living in your stomach when you drink it and you swallow it. The key is you need to chew it. And the reason you got to chew it is when you chew it, the way the body works is when you chew, and you can make your jaw go up and down right now, it sends a signal to your brain. What is it? What type of enzymes do I need to send to the stomach to break it down? So when we lump all things as food, and I know you do this too, my man, I'm going to get dinner tonight. I need food. Food is Mastro's in Orange County, which is fancy. It's Sushi Roku down in Beverly Hills. Food is McDonald's. Food is Doritos. Food is vegan stuff. I'm a vegetarian. Food is whatever, right? So most of us lump it all together. And then the second you talk to your food, I look at all of life as a relationship. What's your relationship with food? So most people's relationship with food is something simple. It's like, oh, my relationship is I need it. So my relationship with food is, if I'm going to have it inside of me for the next 10, 20 years, I need to know what its intentions are and what its name is. So it's like, what's your name? Well, my name is nutrition. My name is entertainment. My name is addiction. Here's what nutrition is. Broccoli, intelligent proteins, no sauce, no dressing. Entertainment, a salad with dressing. Addiction, 3 bags of popcorn at your local movie theater, right? One bag, entertainment, 3 bags, addiction. So what's interesting about it is once you label this, the way your unconscious mind works, it wants you to work perfectly. It totally does, but it doesn't work perfectly. And the reason it doesn't work perfectly is we're sending the wrong signal. So we were at Disneyland years ago with my daughter, she was 5. And what's at Disney? Entertainment and addiction, entertainment, addiction, entertainment, addiction. And I'm not sitting here like talking to my food all day long. Like, what's your name? What's your intentions with me? Right. I'm asking questions like that. And then we're after about 4 days, we're at you've been to Disney, right? Downtown Disney.
Yep.
You know, Naples, that little like Italian place in downtown Disney. It's that big ass pizzeria, right? So we're sitting there and we're getting pizza, and my daughter goes, can I get a salad? She goes, I've had a lot of junk food. And I'm like, wow, there's her body resetting itself. Right. So if you call it what it is, hey, I just had Lucky Charms for breakfast. That's entertainment. I had Subway for lunch. I don't eat any of this stuff, but I'm just talking out loud for other people. I had Subway for lunch, entertainment. For dinner, I had 3 glasses of wine and a steak, entertainment. In the morning, tomorrow, you better get the juicer out, because your body is going to be like, I had entertainment, 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 addiction. Your body is going to know what it needs to do. And if it switches a few of those, your average starts to change. So that's what's fascinating with people. They don't realize that it's the fastest way to change your diet and your body is with language. It is not with workout.
Interesting. So just to touch back on the shake thing. So you're saying because you're not chewing, the brain is not sending the right enzymes and so forth. So what if you chew your shake?
to your shake, you'll help. Next thing you need to do is to look at everything. And the reason I brought that up is it deciphers what it is. What we need to do is have conversations what it is. It's like we call all friends friends. Man, I gave up friends years ago because Mark Zuckerberg screwed up the word. I call them now team, right? And like you, I see we're on the same team and we can be friends. But I don't want to have friends because it's a word that's screwed up. So back to the chewing of the shake, the reason I bring that up is I want you to know what you're actually doing. Most people do not categorize things effectively in their lives. They call it all one thing. They call it all investing instead of recognizing there's different types of investing. There's different types of food and there's different types of relationships.
Right. Yeah, no, I love that. It's really getting down to the root energy that is tied to what it is that you're doing. Right. Yes. And so when you do that, you're bringing it to the surface and therefore you can assess things, I think, more clearly because, you know, knowledge is power, right?
100%.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Very, very interesting. So you also have a technology, human interaction technology. Is that part of what you do at the Institute? Can you tell me about that?
That's my voodoo.
I'm down with some voodoo.
That's what makes us do what we do. I studied neuro-linguistic programming for years and transactional analysis, psychotherapy, hypnosis. HIT is a study of the greatest works of communication in the world and how to use them, how to lower resistance, increase receptivity in ourselves and others to allow change in our lives. And if I would put it simple, it's the ability to use words to affect the nervous system in a very effective way. So it is the most cutting edge communication tools that I've ever seen in the world. And we've done everything from helping people get voices out of their head to phobia cures. There's a lot of, like, I'm the guy that'll talk to a UFC fighter 5 seconds before they walk into a ring, right? Talk to a singer before they go on stage. I do this stuff all the time. And what it is to reallocate how you communicate and what things really mean to you and to move things around inside of the brain. So it's truly the understanding of how we use communication to make our lives work. So every course that we have, from our starting course, Call to Action, how to get people in action in life and to open their eyes to things they've never seen before, is designed to get human beings to not study, oh, Michael's methodology and the 10 ways to do this and the 5 ways to do that. I'd like you to meet you and see what you're capable of. And I'd like to show you how when you say this, this happens to you. And when you feel this, this happens. And when you change the grip on the golf club, you get this with golf. But if you change that grip on how you hold on to that thinking, things change. So none of it is like strange, weird, odd stuff. It's literally like very simplistic, practical stuff on how you calibrate and how you do your life. And I think most people don't really have a plan for how to make their life work the way they want it to.
Right. Very, very interesting. Yeah. I love the approach of, you know, understanding that communication, self-communication, communication with other, it's the root of everything. It's like,
well, tell me one thing that doesn't have communication involved. I'd like to know. I got my pen and paper out. It's blank the page. Why don't you tell me anything that has nothing to do with communication? I'm going to start writing. You go ahead.
Right. Let me get back to you on that.
Yeah, get back to me when it does. I mean, death is a form of communication, right?
Right. Absolutely. Wow. So I'd love to switch gears a little bit here. As I mentioned earlier, we love good stories on the show. And one of the things that I always love to hear from my guests is any story of synchronicity or serendipity or a positive paranormal story, something that's just, you know, inspiring, fun, and has a little bit of wow factor. You got something up
give
your
me,
sleeve?
Yeah, I've had a zillion of those. Give me a context and I'd love to give you one. Like give me that. That's, I have too many and let's narrow down because my brain.
All right.
Going. Whoa. Whole file cabinet's open.
Okay. All right. Let's see. That's where would I would like it to root in? You know, I always love anything that has some level of inspiration behind it. It's like, you know, maybe if it was somehow there was some level of doubt involved or insecurity and then something sort of magical happened to show you a much more exciting, brighter side of it.
Let's go back to the book for a minute. And the reason I want to do this is pretty interesting. So let's go back to the story we started with and we talked about the book. And this is pretty interesting that, and I'll jump all over the place to make this entertaining for all of you.
Sure.
Is jump. That I couldn't get that book done for the save of my life because the guy I was not an author, right? And that's what most people don't recognize. If you're not a millionaire, you can't be a millionaire. You got to become one, and that's a whole process in itself. So I wanted to get this book done. And I had everyone and their mother telling me, oh, it's resistance. You're scared to put yourself out there, level up. And I'm leveling up at every other in my life. Why can I not get this thing done? And I've been talking about a concept called the conduit for years. And what the conduit is a person, place, or thing or situation that comes into our life that leads us to the next thing and then typically disappears. So it is 2007, and I changed my dentist appointment. And all I was doing was changing my dentist appointment. Amazing. I switched from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, okay? Mm-hmm. Or 9 to 7, right. Whatever I did. And right. I'm walking out with my teeth clean. I'm single at the time. And when you're single, the key thing is talk to everybody, right? That's the key. Most people recognize relationships. This right. is pre, like, dating and websites. This is when people actually spoke, right? So right. I see this attractive girl on the other side of the counter. She's in her workout gear. And I look over and I said, hi. And she said, hi. We talked. And her daughter said, mommy, is that your friend? And I overheard her say, not yet. And so I called back the office. I knew a girl working there. And I said, hey, can I get her number? And they're like, HIPAA laws, can't get her number. And I broke all the laws. I got her number, right? And mm-hmm. we went to lunch. And went to lunch with who's now my wife, Deborah. And here's what's crazy. 6 months later, we drive by that dentist office. And it's closed. And it's not there anymore. Like, they never called us. I don't know why it was there. I only went there for a year of my life. And now we have a business. We've got a life. We've got another child together. We're changing the world together. We're doing this whole institute, everything for 17 years. I've been doing this for 13 years. We've been doing this together. And wow. What's interesting is so I'm wanting to get this book done. And to the right over here, I'm not wanting to ask for help. And I mm-hmm. can't ask for help because my identity is a human being that doesn't ask for help. Like, I don't, I'll listen up to a point. I tell everyone else to ask for help, and I'm not willing to ask for help. And
teach best what you most need to learn.
I want to prove to my wife I'm going to do this thing. I want to prove to myself, my 15-year-old teacher, my 9-year-old teacher, I'm going to do this. In one day, I'm out to dinner with some friends. I don't know if you know Tucker Max. Tucker was Scribe. The media is the ones that helped me get my book published. And absolutely incredible human beings. And Tucker called me out at dinner. It was a painful conversation about playing small. And I'm like, no, dude, it's not that. He's like, it is that. I'm like, it's not that. And about a month later, I leaned over to my wife and I said, do you mind like reading this? Maybe you can help me a little bit. She goes, I'd love to. And what happened for me was a really, really interesting thing. A 9-year-old boy couldn't write the book. And the biggest reason most of us can't get what we want in this world was I didn't ask myself a question. What can a 42-year-old man, that was me at the time last year, what is a 42-year-old man that has helped hundreds of thousands of people all over the world, spoken for over 1 million people, individually coached thousands of people, worked with people in every industry that you can imagine, has been doing this for 17 years, is not a wannabe coach, truly makes people's lives better. What can that guy do? Well, that guy can get a book done in 4 days. And one of the greatest things was by asking my wife to help me with the book, not only made my relationship better with her, not only got me over my inability to ask for help, helped me even say this to you right now, that it's something I had to work on. The book got done in 4 days off to the publisher, and now it's out changing people's lives all over the world. But this is the interesting thing that I didn't recognize. My issue wasn't the book. The book was the vehicle to get me to realize that in order for me to level up my own life and to get where I wanted to go, I needed to ask for help from people the closest to me. It also has made our relationship better. That was October and November. What comes in February and March? Well, here's the whole Corona thing. We better have a great relationship. We better be strong to help dominate in this world with our kids, with the world, with our business and everything. So the synchronicity of how all of that came together, that literally I met somebody randomly who showed up in my life, that got me over my biggest fear of asking for help, that I don't have to do it myself, that then guided me to get something done. There was this BS excuse that it was a book. And then finally the book gets done. And here we are walking into a tumultuous time that we're dealing in the world together, unified, instead of coming in together. And there's a difference between together and unified. We are together and unified now because of a common issue. And what's fascinating was the book's better now that she was able to help me finish this thing. I brought her the ADD version. She made it make sense.
That's beautiful. I love that. And it's, you know, it's such a great example of knowing that the sum is greater than the equal parts, and knowing when to, okay, I've got a piece of the puzzle and someone else might have another piece of the puzzle. And it's not about being the only one in being an island. And I think a lot of people like ourselves who can tend to push hard and, you know, overachieve and those sorts of things can fall into that trap of, okay, I got to do it all myself or I'm not worthy or whatever.
Being good at things is a problem. I mean, when you're good at things, you want to be good at things. You want to, and then you got to admit you're not. I mean, remember, I have to admit that I don't know how to do something, which is instant pain. The second I say I can't do this, it's painful. It hurts the ego. It hurts the identity. I'm a smart guy. Right. And here's the thing. Admitting I need help, well, that's hard. That's hard for any human being on earth. And then you feel like you're not good enough. So that's my challenge for most people. They got to step up the game.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Love that. Well, this has been so epic, Michael. For those who want to connect and, you know, follow your work, et cetera, what's the best way to do that?
I mean, get the book. Go to averagesucks.com when you get a minute. You can buy it anywhere in the world. I mean, it promotes Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and everything. You can go to Amazon in Canada, get the book. Go to Australia, there's B.I.B., Books a Millions. You get the book anywhere, right? Get Average Sucks. Get yourself a couple copies. You'll love it. The other thing I was going to say is, I mean, as long as I'm saying this right now, is if you like what we're saying and we talked about how do you overcome that automatic program, we have a class that I've been giving away since February because I figured why not? If we want to get people to grow, why not show them what growth looks like? So I've been doing this live for the last 4 or 5 months. And as long as we're still doing it, I'd love to offer this to you is go to calltoactiontime.com, call the number two or TO, actiontime.com. I have a $600 program that since Corona hit, we've been giving away for free. We've given away up to this point about a few million dollars worth of it already just because we care. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I want a world, I got a very selfish reason. I got a young 8-year-old and I have a 19-year-old. I need a great world for my kids to live in. So we've armed 3,000 to 5,000 people with intelligent thinking patterns, higher levels of consciousness in the last thousands of people in the last couple of months. And it's a telecourse. You can do it from the comfort of your home. All you need is either a computer or a phone to log in. And it's amazing, amazing. It's live, it's interactive, it's incredible. And I want to build a great world for myself and my children because if it's not here, I'm going to build it. And that's what I believe. So I'd like you to be part of that. If you're a person that wants to change, go to calltoactiontime.com and check it out and roll. But all I'm going to ask is please don't take a spot from somebody that could use it. We have a lot of people that are interested. So if you're going to do it, do it. If not, we're in triage mode. We can only help people that want to be helped. And we're not going to work with people that are looky-loose. So if you're serious, do it. If you don't want to change, don't. And I like to work with people that want to make things happen. So this has been awesome, man. I'm happy to have you had me on. I love your mission. While we were here, I clicked subscribe on your channel. I'm going to be listening to all your shows now while I'm driving. Do you know what I mean? So
awesome.
I want to thank
you
for doing this for us. I mean, you're a great gift.
Oh, thank you, my friend. Well, I definitely see you as an incredible reflection as well. We attract, you know, those that are that which is like unto itself is drawn, I believe. And so you are a beautiful reflection, my friend. I appreciate all the work that you're doing in the world and any way I can ever support. And, you know, perhaps we can even do one of these again sometimes.
I'd love it.
I do have one final question for you.
Yes,
and it's my cliche. Are you ready for it? Here it is. In 60 seconds or less, what is the meaning of life according to Michael Burnoff?
The meaning of life is to fully find out who and what you're capable of. And the biggest reason we're here is to fully actualize who it is we are as human beings and to become our full version of ourselves. I call it your average, but it's really to become the full version. Like I'm 6'6", is to be the full spiritual, emotional, healthy relationship, communication version of ourselves. And when we leave this place, to make certain that the vibration that you left made an impact on other people's souls in an empowering way.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I think when we get to the other side, that's going to be the most important thing. How many other me's did I help? And that's
the multiverse. It's like, you know, how many other, you're going to show up again. And it's interesting. It's like, you're going to show up again. The question is, what are you going to have next time you're back or whatever it is that you, or wherever you go, what did you leave for yourself and others?
Yep. Love it. Love it. Love it. Michael, thank you, my friend. And all of you out there listening, thank you for tuning in your beautiful brainwaves to this episode. Until next time, journey well. Love you all so, so much. And if you're feeling the call to come for a week retreat style Mystic Manor immersion, remember to go now and book your time to speak with me directly about stepping into the optimistic vortex at calendly.com/talkwithbrandon while there are still spots left. Otherwise, I look forward to co-creating magic with you at the Mystic Manor.